All right, folks, we are in Task E of the Private Pilot ACS Area of Operation 1. Task E is the National Airspace System. What they want you to know here for references is in the FAR AIM parts 71, 91, and 93. Not that we expect you to read all of them here. We'll simplify this here for you in a second. Then we have 883-2, the Risk Management Handbook, Navigation Charts, and the AIM. All right. Not that you need to go out there and read any of that stuff, just be very familiar with that table of contents from Part 91. Biggest thing here is probably 91.155, which is the VFR cloud clearance and visibility requirements for the different classes of airspace. The objective here in Task E is to determine that you have satisfactory knowledge of risk management and skills associated with the National Airspace System operating under VFR as a private pilot. So, the knowledge section of this, they want to make sure you demonstrate understanding of the different types of airspace, air and airspace classes, and the associated requirements and limitations. 91.155. Not only read that chart in there, read all of 91.155. Read that whole section so you know what all the rules are and all the goofiness of Class G airspace associated with the different types of airspace and airspace classes. All right. Now, we don't expect you to memorize this off the top of your head, but it's something I want you to read at least once so you got a good understanding of it, and when you glance back at it, you'll be able to refresh yourself and come up with an answer pretty quickly as to, hey, when you're in this kind of airspace, what sort of visibility and cloud clearance requirements apply to you? We don't want you to be studying this real thoroughly during the oral exam trying to come up with an answer. We want it to be in your mind, and if it falls out of your mind during the oral exam, no big deal. Just be able to reference 91.155 and get that answer nice and quick as you quickly refresh yourself rather than trying to study it for the first time during the oral exam. Big difference if you find the answer in 10 seconds versus 2 or 3 minutes. Makes the oral go a lot smoother and keeps you a little less stressed out too. Now, as far as the different types of airspaces and things for special use airspace, we'll talk about that here in a second. The next part of knowledge is charting symbology. Have a paper chart with you, have the legend on that side of the paper chart that you can reference, and if by some odd chance there's some symbol he asks you about or she asks you about, the examiner asks you during your private pilot oral, and you don't know what that symbol is and you can't find it for the life of you on the side panel of the chart in the legend, well then look it up in the chart user's guide. Again, that link, you can download that PDF on flyatmikealpha.com under the Ask a Question tab. Go down to Pilot Resources, click on that, and then under Pilot Resources is where you'll find the chart user's guide that you can download, and it has every single symbol known to man that's ever been printed on a VFR sectional chart in that PDF guide. Next up under knowledge, we have Special Use Airspace, SUA, Special Flight Rules Area, and Temporary Flight Restrictions. So, as far as these references, what you really need to know here, besides just, you don't have to read all those references cover to cover, what you really need to know here is the different types of special use airspace. We have alert areas, we have MOAs, we have warning areas, we have restricted areas, prohibited areas, controlled firing areas, NSA national security areas, we have CFRAs and we have SATRs, all right, and that falls under that CFRA area there, that's Part 93. So all those different types of airspace, know the rules associated with each. They're fairly simple. Warning areas are really the same thing as a restricted area, but you can always go through it because technically it's outside the United States airspace, so it's really treated more like an MOA where you don't need clearance to go through it, but it's a bad idea to be going through it when it's hot. MOAs, you never need clearance to go through them, but it's a bad idea to go through them when they're hot. Restricted areas, you can go through them when they're cold, but it's best to always call somebody and make sure the thing isn't hot and be talking ATC. If you're going to go through a restricted area and a prohibited area, you flat aren't going to go through it. You can try to get prior permission to go through it if you really have to, but it's best to avoid those altogether. Just simple answer is, we don't go through prohibited areas ever. Now, as far as NSA's national security areas, those are places we should really just try to avoid, and it usually says on the chart, for reasons of national security, pilots are requested to avoid this area or flights over this area between this altitude and that altitude. Just avoid those areas altogether. It makes life a lot simpler. And then we have controlled firing areas. They are not charted anywhere. That's areas where the military is doing practice firing of artillery, and they keep an eye out for aircraft, and they stop when we get nearby. They're not charted. We don't know about them, and we just need to, well, basically do nothing because they're not on the chart anywhere. We have alert areas, and alert areas are typically where you're going to find stuff around Arizona or in Florida where they have high areas, high concentrations of flight training, and it just says, hey, this is a really busy practice area. Keep your eye out if you're flying through here. Lots of crazy student pilots out there doing steep turns and stalls and all sorts of craziness. Keep your eye out large concentration of small airplanes out there, and especially student pilots, so keep your head on a swivel when you're flying through an area like that. Now, for CFRAs and SATRs, that is the Part 93 stuff. A CFRA is kind of looks like a Class B airspace, the blue lines, but they're a little chunked together, and there's typically not shelves to them. So stuff around the Grand Canyon, around the Hudson River in New York, around Washington, D.C., those are CFRAs, special flight rules areas. You can find out more details on those in Part 93. If you happen to live near one, you might be flying through it. They could easily ask you some questions about it on your private pilot check ride. Bottom line is, though, unless they gave you a scenario where you're going to be flying through one, well, simply say, hey, I have no intention of flying through this area. I'm not super familiar with it. I would probably get my instructor to go with me first before I go flying through one of those things because I've never done it before. I'm not fully familiar with all the rules that pertain to the Grand Canyon CFRA or the Hudson River CFRA or the Washington, D.C. CFRA. I'm not quite sure. I would get my instructor to go fly with me. That's a satisfactory answer for a private pilot to give. It'd be better if you knew everything there was to know about Washington, D.C. and New York and the Grand Canyon and all that complicated stuff and down around Los Angeles and Southern California there. But the bottom line is, as long as you are giving a good, safe answer saying, hey, that's just not something I want to do, and they didn't tell you specifically, hey, plan me a flight right through the Grand Canyon CFRA, well then, you're really not expected to know everything there is about it on the day of your private pilot check ride. So take a little breath there. It's okay. Error on the side of caution. Hey, if I want to fly through that area, that's a great question you got there, Mr. Examiner, about flying around New York or flying through Washington, D.C. around that CFRA, I would have to get my flight instructor to go fly with me, and we'd have to do a couple lessons beforehand to get ready to fly through that area. I'm pretty unfamiliar with it right now. Have no intention of going there anytime soon by myself. As far as SATRs, special air traffic rule areas, again covered by Part 93, those are denoted on the chart with some blue lines going through them, blue little hash lines, and white area on the chart. So the inner area of the SATR is going to be white, like around Ketchikan, Anchorage, and Merrill Field in Alaska, Luke Air Force Base, out towards Phoenix and Arizona. Many different SATRs, special air traffic rule areas. Niagara Falls is a SATR, just special air traffic rules. Nothing crazy, but if you're unfamiliar with these as a pilot, as a private pilot anyways, you can say, hey, look, I don't have any intention to fly over Niagara Falls. Obviously, it's very busy airspace. There's a special air traffic rule in effect over there. I'm not totally familiar with it. Would have to get a flight instructor to go fly with me and give me some further training before I ventured over there into that SATR by Niagara Falls or around Luke Air Force Base in Phoenix or around Ketchikan in Alaska or whatever it might be. Those are satisfactory answers. And as far as temporary flight restrictions go, we know that TFRs are something we can get from a briefing. That's why we always call up the flight briefer before we go flying, and they tell us if there's any TFRs along our route. Those are classified as FDC NOTAMs, and we should be getting them through an electronic briefing or through talking to someone over the phone or over the radio. Best to always talk to a live human being, get that recorded phone call in there, kind of good CYA practice to make sure you're calling in, you're doing your due diligence, getting your NOTAMs from an approved FAA source, and TFRs are a form of FDC NOTAM, temporary flight restrictions, right? We know what those are. We simply don't go through them without ATC authorization when they are in effect, and it's incumbent upon us to always, always, always check before we go flying, right before we go flying, that there's no TFRs, because they do have a tendency to pop up unpredictably, especially when we're in election cycles or election seasons, when our elected officials are moving around campaigning. They can pop up TFRs very, very quickly, and we do not want to be going flying through those things and be unaware of it. If you're ever going to be operating in the area of a TFR, highly recommend you get in contact with the controlling agency, get in contact with ATC as you're flying around there. We can get TFRs for forest fires as well. Again, we want to avoid them. Stay clear of all that firefighting equipment they have out there. If you have to fly through it for some reason, get a hold of ATC, get a hold of the controlling agency for the TFR, whether it's a firefighting TFR or a VIP TFR or a stadium TFR for a sporting game. Always be talking to somebody, make sure you get proper authorization before you ever consider going and flying through one, or just avoid them altogether is a safer bet. Risk management. In Task E here, we have the applicant demonstrates the ability to identify, assess, and mitigate risks encompassing various classes and types of airspace. So, what are the different risks? And how do we mitigate them with the various classes and types of airspace? When do we want to contact ATC? How do we mitigate risk when we're flying through Class G airspace that's uncontrolled? Mitigate risk flying through Class E airspace or Class D or B airspace? How can we mitigate our risks? An endless number of scenarios there, right? Common sense applies. Think about the scenario the examiner gave to you for your check ride, for that simulated cross country. Think about the different classes of airspace you're going through and how can you make it even safer than it already is. That is the question you need to answer for risk management. Next up, we have skills, and this is where you, the applicant, demonstrates the ability to identify and comply with the requirements for basic VFR weather minimums and flying in particular classes of airspace. The best way to do this, and how I test my students on this, is I take out a paper sectional chart and I point to various areas, especially with complicated airspace with lots of layers on it, and I say, hey, tell me the type of airspace we're here in on the ground when we're standing on the ground, and what are the visibility and cloud clearance requirements associated with where we're standing on the ground there. Now move up to 500 feet. What is it? Now move up to 2,000 feet. What is it? Now move up to, 3,000 feet. Now, what if I was standing on the top of this tower? So now I force you to read the altitude of the tower. And if you're at the top of it, what kind of airspace is the tip of that tower in? Those are the questions I ask my students, and that oftentimes the examiner will ask on a check ride to really see if you can correlate all that knowledge of reading that sectional chart and interpreting all the information on it to identify what kind of airspace are you in and what are the basic VFR weather minimums for flying through that particular class of airspace. That is listed again in 91.155. That's where all the answers are for that. And of course, always remember the bare minimum weather minimums are not what we want to fly in. We always want to have our personal minimums much higher than the bare minimums for VFR flight. Usually doubling the VFR minimums is satisfactory. Talk to your CFI. They can help you develop some good personal minimums based on your skill and ability with where you're at. Make sure those are written down on the personal minimum sheet that we talked about before that you should have printed out in the last topic. Next skill we have is that you can correctly identify airspace and operate in accordance with associated communication and equipment requirements. So what is the communication and equipment requirements for Class E airspace? Well, not a whole heck of a lot, right? Or Class G airspace. How about Class D? Well, you need two-way radio communication to go in there. How about Class C? Well, you need two-way radio communication to go in there, and you need a transponder as well as ADS-B for various types of airspace, especially going above Class C airspace or in it, certainly now past 2020. How about Class B airspace? Well, we need that ADS-B, we need the transponder, and we need clearance into the Class Bravo airspace, not just two-way radio communication. Those are the basics of the bare minimum equipment, as well as the communication requirements to go in each type of airspace. Again, outlined for us in Part 91. Lastly, for skills, we have identify the requirements for operating in special use airspace, SUA, or within a TFR, temporary flight restriction. Identify and comply with SATER and CFRA operations if applicable. So if they give you a scenario to go fly through a CFRA or a SATER, comply with that. Be able to read in Part 93 what those requirements are. There's a lot of supporting information that's easier to understand for the CFRAs and SATERs out there in the country from FAASafety.gov. So if Part 93 is a little bit too much lawyer speak for you, FAASafety.gov has some great documents that break down the explanations and the rules and regulations that pertain to special air traffic rule areas and special flight rule areas that are in Part 93 that we talked about earlier. And for special use airspace, identify the requirements for operating in special use airspace or a TFR. We mentioned that earlier about what about an MOA? No clearance, but good idea to avoid it if it's hot. What about restricted airspace? Well, you need clearance if you're going through there and it's hot. And it's always a good idea to talk to ATC before going through it. Warning area, much like an MOA, don't need clearance to go through it, but bad idea to go through it if it's hot. Controlled firing area, not charted, no way to get clearance. How about a national security area? Well, you're requested to avoid it, so it's best to avoid those if you at all can. How about alert areas? Well, no controlling agency really, just keep your head on a swivel because lots of crazy people flying out there. Prohibited areas, we avoid them altogether. We're not going to try to fly through a prohibited area. We'll just deviate around it, much simpler. And then, of course, with the TFR, always, always, always check just before you take off. Make sure there's no TFRs that came up. If you're on a long flight, get an updated briefing en route from Flight Service Airborne over the radio. If you're on a long flight, to make sure no TFRs have popped up along your route. And then, if you do need to fly through a TFR, make sure you're talking to the controlling agency a long time before you get there and that they are giving you permission to do so. Not recommended to go bussing through a TFR without talking to somebody on the radio. You'll usually make some friends in the form of fighter pilots or helicopter pilots that come to intercept you. So good idea to really check before you go flying. And if you're on a long flight, get an updated briefing, make sure no TFRs have popped up. And make sure that if you do plan on flying through one, you are talking to ATC or talking to the controlling agency. That is it for Task E, National Airspace System. We'll see you back here for Task F, performance and limitations.